How's it going today? This is the Revved Up Outdoor Podcast with your host, Zach Wozniak and
Chris Turbush. This is the podcast for you, the ordinary Joe, who simply just loves the outdoors, wants to get outside, and just enjoys it tremendously. This is for you.
So we just wanted to welcome you guys and thank you for coming along this journey with us. Hope you give us a listen and tune in weekly for the new podcast that we'll be releasing. How's it going, guys? This is Zach and
this is Chris.
Welcome from, again, Revved Up Outdoors Podcast. We are, well, we're just hanging out. We're just, you know, kind of kicking it. This is episode 2 officially. We're excited about that. What did we talk about? Do you remember when we talked about episode 1?
Yeah, we kind of got the, we called maybe, what, deer season primer for archery and kind of just went through a few things there and shared a little bit about some preparation and maybe some tips on what you can do if you're late to the game and getting prepared.
Yeah, definitely. And overall, like, honestly, if you're just tuning in, this is the first episode you're listening to, I'd recommend go back, listen to episode 1 first, because ultimately we also gave a little detail on just what this podcast kind of will be.
Yeah.
We won't cover that here because we don't want to waste your time. But again, we do thank you guys for listening. We thank you for being a part of this. To us, this is something that we get to do is share some of the knowledge and experience, I guess, we've obtained, right?
You know? Yeah, not just that, but some of the good times, right?
That's
what outdoors is all about. It's about family, friends, and really just enjoying it. And so today we thought we'd share some of those times of excitement and enjoyment that we've had with some of you guys.
Yeah, if you guys, you know, we were talking. Have you ever, you know, all of us have, if you're an outdoors person and you've done this for a couple of years at all or in a lifetime like we have, I mean, everyone has those stories that are just for some reason like, you know what, I got to tell you about this. And then when they do, you're 100% locked in. You're like, man, I want to go with you. Can we go relive that whole scenario? Or actually, you know what, you just told me about the trip you took here. I'm booking my ticket now and I'm actually going to go. And so that's kind of a little bit of what we're going to do here. We're going to try to bring you on the journey of a couple stories that we've experienced, a couple things we've lived.
Yeah.
And in hopes that, again, this will fire you up to want to be a part of the outdoors and also just for you to understand, I guess, ultimately to us, how wilderness and outdoors is honestly a powerful thing. And we believe personally in protecting it, caring for it, and going out and living in it. So
that's right. You know, stories are things that just kind of flow from you. The other day I was at the jewelry store buying my wife a 20-year anniversary present. So, yeah, just throwing that out there. 20 years, big
20.
Deal. Anyways, and the sales associate was checking me out, and she looked like she was younger. And she's like, oh, you just got back from Alaska. She showed interest, and I immediately just started telling her, like, hey, you get a chance, you got to go. You got to experience it. You know, you're young, get a friend. Take like 2 weeks and just go camp out in Alaska. And she seemed like she was pretty fired up about it because I explained her all the cool things. And it just sharing stories. That's what we do. You share your experiences with somebody, it's usually in a story form. You share what happened and all the details.
Yeah, it's one of those things too. Like I always think back, right? Like we all have grandparents or great-grandparents even that we can recall times sitting at their feet and hearing stories or even wise tales at times of how they experienced the outdoors or different things they lived. And I remember even just sitting there and just taking some of this stuff in and, man, being like, I can't wait until the day I get to have some of these to share. And like you said, it's part of who we are as human beings, right? To pass on some of that we've experienced and just hopefully it brings people on board to want to join in, right?
Yeah, when I left, she was super pumped. She was excited. She's like, man, that sounds like a lot of fun. I want to go to Alaska too. And I'm like, you know what? You just need to do it. Yeah. Just go.
Yeah. And again, I think that's what, for a little glimpse, that's what this podcast is all about to us. That's what Revved Up Outdoors is in a nutshell. It's getting people excited to get in the outdoors, to get in the wilderness, to hunt, to fish, to camp, to hike. So you name it, and that's what really our passion is, to see more people in our generation or the ones before or even after us to be on fire to join us on this endeavor of just learning and growing in what the outdoors represent. So,
yep.
Again, we We're excited about this, are you?
Oh, heck yeah.
We've been thinking about stories since we were last talking about it, trying to figure out what we're going to share. You know, we don't want to give you guys all everything, but we got it. We want to give you something. We want to bring you in on this journey and let you feel really a part of who we are. And I guess what better way to get to know us more than hearing stories that we've lived, and I guess what fires us up, right? That's right.
So when I was getting prepared to go to Alaska, we were going to do a lot of hiking, and I'm not a big hiker personally. I know you are. And so I had to pick your brain on, you know, some information there. And, you know, maybe, hey, could you share with us maybe like a, you know, hiking or a camping story that you got that could kind of like, you know, give us an idea of, you know, some of the things you've experienced?
Yeah. So, you know, for, I didn't mention this in the first episode, but for some, for those of you that don't know, that are just now listening in, you haven't really gotten to know us. Chris, you were able to share a little bit about your family. I'm actually married. This is our fifth year. So again, we're a little bit behind Chris over here with this big 2-0. But that's an amazing thing that we're excited to follow behind your guys' footsteps on what you guys have built. So my wife, Lauren, me and her are very big outdoors. She's actually very into photography. Some of the stuff you'll probably see from our trips will be, well, probably her following along with us in a camera and taking the pictures. So, you know, we also have just had a new son. He's 3 months old, little Remington. In case you don't think I like the outdoors, now it's official, I do. No, honestly, but so me and my wife had the blessing to go over on a trip to New Zealand once. You know, honestly, we didn't really, it wasn't really a choice. We were living in Australia at the time, and you can get a 90-day traveler's visa, and you have to renew them. Well, to renew them, you got to get the heck out of the country for a minimum 5 days. And so we just didn't really have an option. If we wanted to stay in Australia, we had to get out. Makes not a lot of sense, but that's a different story for a different time. So we chose New Zealand. It's about the same flight from Michigan to Florida, about an hour and a half up in the air, 2 hours. You know, it's not too long. And so we were kind of always thought about New Zealand, always seen stuff on it, and just, you know, got fired up to go. So we kind of had, I think we had like 10 days to kind of get prepped. And when we were in Australia, we didn't have all of our outdoor stuff we have currently here. Because it was just not convenient to take it, right?
Maybe, why were you in Australia?
So, as we said at the beginning, Revved Up Outdoors, we are reverend for pastors. And so I was actually there for Bible school, and me and my wife are both in Bible school out in Australia. And yeah, so we did not think to take outdoor stuff. We were going to Bible school, and, you know, it was just one of those things. You're going to college. Why should I bring every tent and hiking gear?
Yeah, especially because you were in a big city,
but yeah,
with no car.
Yeah.
Where would you go to be able to go?
And right.
This kind of fell on your lap, huh?
Yeah, so we kind of, again, kind of that moment, we started getting stuff together. They have some pretty cool camping stores there, actually, because, well, the Outback, right? They have a lot of cool stuff. So we got, started going to these stores, started gathering stuff. We got a quick hiking tent, you know, something that we could throw up and just makeshift a house for 5 days. And because we were committed to not stay in a hotel, we were just going to go and experience the outdoors, whatever that looked like. We didn't know much about New Zealand. So we just kind of threw some stuff together, got some hiking gear, and went from there. We booked this trip, flew in. And again, we didn't know much, so we get to New Zealand, and we got stopped right when we got in the airport by the airport staff. And they're like, hey, by the way, do you guys have a place to stay? And we're like, no, we're going camping. And they're like, yeah, that's not how this works, you know? Like,
weird.
Yeah, we're like, okay. And they're like, well, do you have a minimum of $5,000 cash at your access? And we're like, yeah, but not showing you it. Like, and he's like, well, I'm going to need to see it, so proof that you guys are going to be able to sustain yourselves while you're here.
Weird.
So, again, that whole thing was a weird scenario. And we're just like, hey, man, you know, whatever. We ended up just, I gave him, flashed him like $2,500. And I'm like, you know, other than that, I'm not showing you anything else. We were ready to get jumped outside this airport. Like, I ain't even going to lie. So, we got all of our stuff. We got all of our gear, camera gear and everything for hiking and camping. And we make our way out of the airport to, again, have no really idea where we're at. You walk out and you can see the mountains and all the cool stuff that New Zealand offers, but we had no idea how to get to, like, our destination, where we want to start hiking and camping. And we flew into Christchurch, for some of you that know where New Zealand is. We were actually 2 months after they just had a pretty devastating earthquake. So it was kind of just a whole weird scenario, but it was cool to kind of witness the how the community was kind of rallying. So this lady walks up, and right away, you've seen her get off a bus. She walks over to us. She's like, "Hey, you guys look lost." I'm like, "I'm glad it's that obvious to you, you know, like, I'm glad we just look like we're just no idea what we're doing." And she's like, "Well, hey, where are you trying to get? And I'll help you guys get there." And so she was actually one of the bus drivers. And she wasn't going to our region that we were trying to make it to. But she connected us with another lady. And honestly, one of the things I want to say about New Zealand, first off, is if you ever have a chance to go to New Zealand, the people there, the culture of the people, is one of the most beautiful things I've ever witnessed, honestly, ever. It's just, they treat you like almost like a tight-knit family, even if you're a guest. As long as you respect their culture, their customs, I mean, they will literally do everything and anything for you, which is, I mean, quite powerful. So, again, she locks us in, and, you know, she starts to take us on this bus ride, and we're like the only two on the bus. It's like a big old school bus setup, only it was painted purple.
Purple people eater.
Yeah, the purple people eater. And so we're on this bus, and we're just kind of going, trusting this lady's going to get us where we got to go. And honestly, it was just taking in a lot of the views at the moment. And we had a lot of crap that we brought, obviously, like enough to get us through 5 days. And so she gets us out. We get to this camping area. And we pretty much set up for the week, right, for the five-day trip. To then realize, obviously, we don't have much food. And the lady actually told us, "You guys pretty much came at one of the worst times." And we're like, "Well, why is that?" She said, "Other than the earthquake that just recently hit, it was raining like nonstop. It was the rain season, so monsoon season." And again, we didn't know this. It's if you don't know, New Zealand is literally like a strip of land just surrounded by ocean. Mm-hmm. So it's prone for earthquake. I mean, for earthquakes, it's right on a fault line. It's prone for like tropical storms to come in, cyclones, crap left and right. And so we kind of got ourselves set up, and we're like, "Okay, we need to go to the closest store, which is a Woolworths, they call it, for a grocery store out there." And we're like, "We got to go get us some grub, or we're not.
We need some food.
Yeah, we got to get through the night." So we got our tent set up. We make it to the local Woolworths or whatever, and we got just that bag rotisserie chicken, you know, like you can get anywhere in America.
How much did that cost over there?
Honestly,
in Alaska? It's $12
for rotisserie chicken. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it was like $10 or $12 as well. I mean,
it's just insane.
The thing is, so New Zealand's closer to our dollar than Australia. Australia's a little bit of a difference. So we were, everything there, like McDonald's, right? You'd go to get a meal from McDonald's, it would be half the size of an American's large meal, as they're large. And it was $40 for two people to eat. So it was one of those things that it just, the prices were crazy. So again, we kind of got our stuff set up. We cracked open. I remember we got like the rotisserie chicken. We got some breadsticks. We got some random stuff. And by the time we started our way back towards the camp setup, it started just downpouring. And honestly, that was the whole weather. 4 out of the 5 days we were in New Zealand. So you're wondering, one, probably why am I picking this as the topic that I'd want to talk about as one of the most exciting trips we've been on. Because honestly, to me, it was one of those things, I knew I'd withstand it. I really didn't care. I've grown up always outdoors. But my wife was kind of new to this, but she was always the one that would muck through water. You're like, "You're getting your shoes wet." She's like, "I don't care." And so this was one of those moments where I got to kind of see, hey, she's kind of in it. She's like committed to the cause. And so every day we'd have to pretty much wake up, pack down our tent, hang it in the tree for while we got food, breakfast ready and all that. And then we'd take it and we rented like little cabinets inside this campground that was nearby. We walked there and we would stuff all our stuff in a cabinet so it wouldn't get stolen. And then we'd go and proceed to hike for the day in the rain or whatever. And I'm, again, you got to remember, we're pastors. And I'm pretty covered with tattoos. And so I'm hiking in a tank top. And one of the funny stories I remember is we just came from Bible school. We're hiking up this mountain, this road mountain. And as we're there, they were doing like pretty much sprint car races through the mountain, zigzagging through. It was pretty cool to witness. But as we're making our descent up the mountain the first time, down comes this pack of people, and they're not dressed for hiking, like, at all. It didn't make sense. And so the more I'm watching them as they come, I'm like, what is going on, man? So a pack of them go by us, and we're kind of like, okay, that was weird, you know? And they have one straggler that was just, it kind of drifted a little bit, and he was walking right at us. And he walks up, and he just starts to do the whole, you know, the world's going to end. You need to repent and know Jesus. And so for those of you that aren't already assuming what it was, this guy, it was a Mormon guy, and he was a really good guy. And he walks up, and he's giving me the whole spiel about how basically you need to turn to Jesus. I can only assume it was the tattoos that, you know, threw the dude off.
He's probably like, this guy needs salvation.
This guy does not know the Lord. He does not know anything.
He's going to hell.
Yeah, it was honestly one of those hilarious moments. And then I looked at him at the end, and he started telling me about how the Lord was coming back. And I started quoting scripture back to him. And he kind of like looked at me like, what the heck is wrong with you? And I kind of just smiled, and I said, sir, I'm really glad we got to talk to you. Really good dude. I said, I'm going to be honest. I said, we're in Bible school, man. We're becoming pastors. Like, we kind of know this whole thing. And I said, you know, so again, I was like basically left that it was good. It was good talking to you, but, you know, maybe next time don't look at somebody and assume they don't know the Lord. Maybe start with asking them if they do, right? Like, it's one of those funny conversations. So then we again, said our goodbyes, a little bit more conversation, but I'll leave that for another day. And we made our ascend up the mountain, and honestly, it rained majority of it. But the coolest part was about New Zealand is honestly, so in most of America where you hike, we have designated trails. You know, it's designated usually in national parks or state parks or stuff of that nature. We don't tend to often go off the beaten path too much into different properties. The way they're hiking in New Zealand set up is as you roam the mountainside, different families will own actually portions of the mountain. And that's their pastures for their sheep, their goats, and all that. And so as you cross through different people's lands, there will be fences with little gates and like a sign, like either like an open and close, basically. So like sheeps are moving pastures, or the sheeps are staying in this one, please close when you leave. And I thought that was a pretty cool thing because, again, we look at America, right? We're all so, like, protective of our crap.
Our property.
Yeah, like, you walk in my land. We're coming out with shotguns.
You
like,
get that sign up there that says, you know, if you can see this, you're in my slope or something like that, right?
I this home resolves under the Second Amendment or, you know, whatever. And so we're very protective. And if somebody did walk through our land, again, we'd probably meet them with some sign of force.
Yeah.
And yet we're walking through this vast, I mean, it's just this beautiful grassy mountainside. It's not like rough rock. It's just beautiful grassy mountainside. And it's a sight to see because as you're up on this mountain, again, New Zealand's not very wide. So you can see side to side and you can see the water on each side of you. You can see on the other side from Christchurch directly to what would be, I would assume, the west. Was the mountain ranges there, which I forget where they were, but they were, again, it was just the snow-capped mountain range in the distance. And so you're just stuck here and you're seeing this beautiful land and how they're so open to just allow you guys to walk and cross over through people's property. And I think it was the expectance that you would treat and honor that land and that person's property that was the coolest part, because we didn't see one person not follow the rules when we were there. We didn't see, I mean, at least on the hiking path. One thing I've learned, right, and you've learned, as people of outdoorsmen, we've learned people that usually are into the outdoors have a very high respect
for the outdoors.
Right. And so it was really cool to see. I mean, there was a couple people that as they walked, they were cleaning up the trails and just all that. And
you pulled up the mountains. Yeah, those are the mountain names, apparently.
Yeah, I want to say it was Mount Cook, but I can't remember to be correct. So yeah,
either way, it's got snow on it in this picture, so it probably was.
And here's a good thing, right? If hopefully this trip gets you excited, go look it up. What mountain range is across from Christchurch? And start to maybe plan your trip through that, because honestly, that's the one area we didn't get to, But a lot of New Zealand, you can travel in just like a little travel van you can rent for like $50 a day. Hmm. You can get in this thing and you can travel the countryside. And that, to me, that's worth it. But so again, it was cool as we walked through these grassy areas. There was a lot of mountain bikers, a lot of different hikers. But then you can kind of go off into the grassy meadows on the side of this mountain and just really kind of be away from everything. And you were just looking down on different towns. And again, like there was one area where I'll put up a picture on our Facebook page. So again, if you are listening on Spotify or any of the apps that we're on, go to our Facebook page, because that's where we're going to continue to share just different content from the trips when we talk about them. We'll try to keep you guys updated with different stuff of what we're doing on these trips and different pictures. So that's definitely a big thing to look at. But again, you look down and there was this big opening where the ocean kind of came in, and all of a sudden we see this ship, and it looks like, honestly, like a little Legos car, like just, it's tiny.
Yeah.
And it's Caribbean blue waters, and again, grassy mountainsides all the way around you, and you're just kind of like sitting there watching this thing slowly come through. It was one of those moments, like for me at least, that you stand and you're kind of like, wow. Like if you... That ship was, it ended up being basically a big freighter, a big ocean freighter at that. It wasn't like ones we necessarily always see in the Great Lakes, but the big ocean freighter. And to me, right, that's one of the bigger creations of man, is seeing a ship of that size, things like the size of a skyscraper. But being able to look down from the top of this mountain, look down at it, and you start to see the mountains and everything around it, and you start to stand there and really just kind of take it in and go, this is all what God created, and that's one of the pivotal things that man's created, and it doesn't even compare in the size. And that's just like to give you an example of, again, the vastness of the ranges around you. I mean, you were standing there and you felt like an ant when you looked around, and it was honestly majestic. Like, it was the Caribbean blue waters is what did me in, because I sat there and just stared at him, and I'm like, you don't get this. Mountains and Caribbean blue. Like,
yeah.
It's usually Caribbean blue and beach, you know. And I know someplace in the Caribbean you get it. But in New Zealand, of all places, I wouldn't have assumed that would have been there. So, again, and one of the other, I guess, cooler parts about it, other than, again, the different rains, the different getting involved with the cultures and really getting to know people, I think one of the biggest things I loved was the stinking sheep. My wife walked away from this trip with 3,000 pictures of sheep. And I tell you, I'm like, honey, we got sheep back in the States. Like, you go down a road, there's sheep everywhere, right? Like, but the way these sheep would come, you'd be walking the trail and they would swarm you, almost like that. Now you're their shepherd.
Yeah.
And then by the time you'd say something to them, right? Because one of the things I've learned is sheep are very responsive to the voice of their shepherd. And so the second you say, like, get out of here, you know, like, because you're getting swarmed, they'd hear your voice and they'd go back to where they were, because they'd realize, like, real quick, this is not my shepherd,
this
right?
This is not the guy.
Yeah, this is not the guy that usually does this. But it was, again, the coolest part. So if I had to leave with the coolest part of New Zealand, through a rained out week, 4 out of the 5 days we had a rain. But we pursued through the rain. We went and still hiked. We made sure to take the safe precautions you need to with that. Obviously, the biggest safe precautions are camera gear. And really just making sure we had the wet sacks for that. But other than that, like, honestly, one of the biggest things was the culture of people. How they literally just take you in. It's not American. I guess that's the only way I can start. I love America. I love Americans. But we are just a hard-nosed, aggressive type.
Let's be honest. Americans kind of stink, sort of.
We're kind of ignorant when it comes to the way we interact with people we don't know.
Yeah.
And so, again, it is what it is, right? The culture, the vastness of that, just the nature there, and just seeing the different types of nature. And one thing that was amazing, this is for, okay, if you're a woman listening in, or you're a man that just doesn't like things that are aggressive, New Zealand actually has nothing that can kill you, like no poisonous spiders, no snakes, no doggone tarantulas or any of that crap. The biggest thing you're going to get hurt by is some sheep or even red stag. They have a little bit of it, but they don't have a lot. So again, an antler would take you out. But that was one of the biggest things, is you didn't have to worry when you camped. You didn't have to worry about getting snuck up on. Like, again, we just came from Australia, where spiders were literally like that, crawling on the walls, and we're just like, whoa. So to me, if I could ever recommend, you know, again, it was one of the virtually weather-wise and climate, it was one of the worst trips we could have ever gone on. But because we pursued through and we went and actually ventured out into the wilderness, no matter what, it honestly is one of the ones that me and my wife will talk about over everything. And so again, if I ever could recommend one camping adventure, go head up New Zealand. Honestly, it was one of the ones that forever was imprinted on our hearts. We've always said now, if we could live anywhere in the world tomorrow, we would go and live there. So that would be one of mine. Now, that's mine. Hope you, I didn't lose you guys yet, because now you're going to get to hear probably a story from Chris over here about, so if you had to think of something that you really felt passionate to tell a story about, like what topic first comes to mind for you?
Oh, probably, you know, for me, outdoors, I got some hunting stories.
Yeah, I know you got some hunting stories.
I had some fishing stories. I mean, as you were talking, I was thinking about my last trip to Canada. It kind of goes along with your story a little bit. I don't know if you want to go into that one.
Yeah, I mean, and for everyone here, like, right, we're in Michigan.
Yeah, we're...
So get to Canada, well, before COVID, to get to Canada... It was nothing. It was extremely easy.
Oh, yeah. It was nothing. It was.
This is, I'm going to assume, knowing your past a little bit, this was one of your trips you went over for fishing, right?
Oh, yeah.
So give us a little bit. Where'd you go?
All right.
Tell us a little bit about the actual story.
So here we go. So Michigan, like I said, close to Canada. I usually go up towards Wawa. So Wawa, Canada.
Wawa.
We like to say it, Wawa. And actually, this time we went to Wawa and then went east over to Chaplot. It's about a 12-hour car ride. And then it actually was longer because I had to pick my cousin up at the airport. Well, my cousin was in California, so he flew in. I drove down the airport to pick him up and had the minivan, you know, right. That's what I had at the time. We loaded the minivan with just stuff. Picked him up at the airport, I think, at 12:30. And we decided, so it was about a 12-hour drive. We'd get there about 12 o'clock the next day. Anyway, so we hop in the car, and we just jet. And I drive straight through, all the way through Canada, through customs, all the way up. I actually stopped at the Walmart. A little tip for you. Groceries are expensive in Canada.
That's a good point, yeah.
Buy your stuff in America before you get there. Anyways,
How is it difficult to take over your food? Do you got to have it kind of, you know, set up so they can see what you're bringing? Or
Look at the rules. They got rules on what you're allowed to bring, what you're not allowed to bring. Because us Michiganders cross the border so often, they're usually pretty lax.
Yeah.
I've not had anyone have any issue with anything that I brought over. But yeah, obviously there are things you're not allowed to bring over. Pay attention to that. Anyways. We've been searched quite a bit, and it's quite stressful. But anyways, it was always fine. This trip, we get through, we drive on up, we get up to the lodge, and we had been up now for a day and a half straight. I was slightly tired and delirious. We check in, and I'm excited, all right? I'm not the one who's like, oh, I'm tired, I'm going to go to sleep. No, I'm on vacation. I'm in Canada. I'm going to go fishing. So we got our boat, got it all loaded up. And we had the map of the lake, and we decided we're going to go fishing. But we're not going to go far, you know, because it's the first night. It's like 5 o'clock. It's cold. It's rainy. We're going to go fishing. So we go out. We go fishing, and we're not having any luck because we're probably in all the wrong places because we didn't want to go very far. And so we're fishing. We fish for about 2 hours, and now we're all wet. We're cold. We're hypothermic, right? I mean, maybe not, but we felt like we were. So I look at my son. He was like 10 or 12 at the time. His lips were blue. His teeth were chattering. My cousin, he's a big guy. And he's like, you know, no big deal, you know, but yeah, I'm getting cold. Let's go in. And before we had left, I had told my cousin, like, hey, listen, I'm going to put you in charge of navigation, okay? I want to just pay attention to where we are and then help us to get back. And I kind of knew where we were. We didn't go very far. But you go through a couple of narrows and a couple little spots. Anyways, so we get there and we're done fishing and we decide we're going to go back because we're cold. So we load up and get to this little spot. And I said, hey, Russ, which direction do we go, right or left? And he goes, we go left. And I looked at him and I said, are you sure we go left? Because I'm pretty sure the lodge is to the right. I said, but I trust you. I put you in charge. I trust you.
It's one of those moments where your inner instinct was just like, I do not trust you.
No.
But we're going to go with it anyway.
But we're going to go with it anyways. and I guess I did have I have an old GPS. It's one of those like Garmin something rather that just gives the breadcrumb trail. Yeah. And it kind of did show, sort of, it looked like we should go to the left. but reality is we really needed to go to the right. But anyways, neither here nor there. So we get in the boat, and we're cold, so we put it at full throttle, and we get going. And we're driving, and I look at my cousin, and I said, which way do we go now? And he says, you need to go to the right. And I'm like, are you sure we need to go to the right? Because I feel like we're going the wrong direction.
Oh.
He's like, no, go to the right. So we go to the right, and we keep going around this. It's basically what it was. It's a great big peninsula. And the lodge was located on the other side of the peninsula, but it came down to a narrow. And it looked like you could get there, but it was a mile walk by land. Anyway, so we're driving through. We get to the end, and we stop, and we run out of water and in the boat. And I looked at my cousin, and I said, hey, we're done. Like, we can't go anywhere else. You told me the wrong direction. He's like, no, I didn't. And we had a little argument in the boat. And so then he says, hey, we need to turn around and go back. I said, oh my gosh. Okay. We'll turn around and go back. So we decided to head and go back through. And as we fire up the boat, we start traveling. And I don't know if you've ever been to Canada before. I'm going to give you a little bit of a tip. Tip number one, be careful when you're driving your boat. Don't go very fast. Number two, when you are going fast, pay attention to where the points in the islands come together, because that's usually a shallow spot. Yep. So we go zipping through, and there's this little big, huge rock and an island in the middle and another island over here and then another rock over here. It's kind of like this little spot that looks like I can kind of sneak between them.
Yeah.
And so I'm going full board, like I think it was 22 or 27 miles an hour, I forget what it was. So we're moving, right? We're on plane, we're going. And just about the exact moment that I said to myself, you probably should slow down. So I let off the throttle, and as I let off the throttle, boom, we came to a complete stop. I mean, you're going 20 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And dead stop. My cousin, he's a little bit bigger than my 10-year-old son at the time. He was sitting behind him, and I think he crushed him. So we hit complete stop. I crashed into the cowling for the steering wheel. Cousin ran over my son and smashed the chair. And immediately my thought wasn't, hey, are you okay?
I can see this whole image playing out in my head, by
yeah,
the way.
It was bad.
It's quite amazing.
My first instinct was, I don't care if you're okay. How much is this going to cost me?
My boat!
No, this is a rental.
Oh, no!
This was a rental. And when you sign up for this rental, like, you sign your life away. It's like, I agree to pay for all of these damages and yada, yada, yada. And immediately I'm thinking,
we're fleeing back to America.
Immediately I'm thinking, I just ripped the lower unit off this boat. Like, thousands of dollars. It's going to be bad. So I get up, and I'm like, I look behind us, and I don't see an oil slick. So if you rip your lower unit off, have the lower unit oil that will peel out and make a – I don't see any oil out the back. And then I say, hey, you guys okay? And then they're like, you know, yeah, we're hurt, but we're okay. And I'm like, thank goodness. I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad we're good. Lift the lower unit up out of the water and look and notice it just had ripped the skag off. So if you're not familiar with the skag, it's that little triangle pointy thing on the bottom of the motor. That's there to actually protect it from
stuff
like that. It broke that off. And I was like, you know what? Winner.
It did its job.
Thank the good Lord.
Yeah, right.
It didn't ruin the motor on the first day, 2 hours into our trip. And so we ended up finding our way back to camp. I take over and I'm like, listen, we're going to need to go this way. We drive all the way back around, get back to camp. We get back to camp. And when we get back, I had mentioned before, we were really cold.
Yeah.
It was 50 degrees when we got there. I think it dropped another 10 degrees. It was like 40 degrees, and it was July. It was insane. It was cold. It was wet. We were all soaking wet. And to top it off, I was being a little bit frugal with the trip.
No.
Yeah. You'll learn this about me. I'm usually either making something to make it cheap, or I'm trying to do something on the cheap. Anyway, so we were tenting. We didn't stay in the cabin. See, if you tented there, it was like $40 a day to tent or something like that.
Yeah, I remember it being a pretty big discount.
It was huge. Like, you're talking, like, a cabin for the week was like $1,000 or $1,500. I got done with everything for like $200. I was like, winner, winner, bro. We'll take it, right? And so we're freezing cold. We're borderline hypothermic. What are we gonna do? Yeah, right.
Right.
So before we had left, we set the tents up. We got them all put together. We had our beds all made. And you know, I look at Ethan and my son. His lips are blue. He's chattering. Like he's like, I can't feel my fingers. You know, he's doing this sort of thing. And I'm like, all right, listen. They have a shower house here. Go hop in the shower and get yourself warmed up. And so he went, hopped in the shower, got himself warmed up, crawled in his bed, and he was out, like he was asleep. We didn't even eat dinner that night, and it was interesting to say the least. Like we thought you know, we had just planned this trip, drove 14 hours basically to get up there, and the first day we thought, man, we just ruined everything.
Yeah, right.
And we learned a lot on that trip. Number one, download better directions. So let me give you another tip. View Ranger. It's a lightly used app. You can use it for hiking. You can use it for trails. You can use it for boating. It's really awesome. You download it, then you upload or you download the offline map.
Yeah.
And anyways, we were able to get enough internet while we were there. Download the offline map, and guess what? We never had a problem again. Yeah. I mean, we navigate perfectly. So learned that. That was perfect. Another thing we learned is when it's raining outside and you're in a tent, you're probably going to get wet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is.
Bound to happen.
It's bound to happen.
Yeah, don't care how good your tent is.
Don't care. And so we ended up having to figure out in innovative ways with no electricity,
mm-hmm.
no nothing, how to dry off and keep yourself warm. It was kind of exciting. That trip was very cool. So my son had caught his biggest fish ever.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. So we were all fishing. We were casting. So we had the three of us on the boat. One in the front, one in the middle, one in the back.
Right.
And I was in the front. My cousin was in the middle. Ethan was in the back. And so one was using like a hard bait or like a spinner or something, like, you know, like where you can move fast. I was using that. My cousin was using a drop shot, and then Ethan was using a tube jig.
Mm-hmm.
Tube jig is relatively simple, doesn't hang up as much. So he was using a tube jig, and so he was the last person to cast. And he cast into this spot, and all of a sudden this great big fish comes in, and you saw it swirl at the bait. And I'm in the front, and my cousin says, hey, Ethan's got a big fish on.
Yeah.
And I say, well, how big are we talking? Like, right. Do I actually need to stop fishing? He goes, no, it's actually really, really big.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, legit? And he's like, yeah. So I stopped what I was doing, put my pole away, went back and looked, and his rod, it was one of those, like, Walmart special, you know, like, little kid, 5-foot pole.
Gets the job done, but usually, if it's anything big, ain't gonna get the job done.
Yeah, and I took the reel off because the reel was junk, gave him one of my reels, and anyway, so he's out there, and this fish is literally just, like, if you've ever caught a big fish, and it was a big pike, it was like a 36-inch pike, it's casting a wake as it's, you know what I mean? As it's just right. Going back and forth, side to side, casting a wake. His line's going all over. He's just, you know, he's just full on, like, reeling like crazy, and his dry is just going out. And I'm thinking, this is a big fish. He's got a 10-pound test. He doesn't have a leader on, which you should have a leader, you know. And I'm thinking, this may not go well. We're going to play it really safe. Right. So we left his drag really, really loose. Fought the fish for like 15 minutes. It's going all over the place. Round and around. It finally gets tired. And we go to bring it up to the boat, right? And so I'm slowly dialing in the drag a little bit tighter so he can get it in. And as we get this fish in the boat, I go to the back, get the net. Bam! Net that thing. Pull it in the boat. And, you know, he's just, dad, I got a big fish! You know, because he was younger at the time, you know. I got you know, I'm like, yeah, this is a great fish. This is awesome. This is cool. And we didn't want to kill it.
Right.
We wanted to release it. And the lodge was actually giving an incentive. If you caught a big enough fish, you could actually get money from the lodge to go towards your next trip. So, like, we got to get pictures of it. We have to get a video of us releasing it to qualify for it, right? And we measured it all, got the pictures, got it all set up. And as I am unhooking the fish, I find out he actually lassoed the fish. He didn't. The fish didn't actually have a hook in it.
Yeah.
So when the pike had hit at the tube jig, it went in his mouth, out his gill, back around into his mouth, and the jig was just sitting there. So he had created a loop around the fish. It was insane. To this day, I have no idea how the line didn't break. It was insane.
Yeah.
Anyways, we get the fish in, we pull it in, we get pictures. I'll put those pictures up sometime if you want to see them. It's really kind of cool because, you know, we got this great big 36-inch pike sitting there in front of us. We release it and just super excited. We didn't catch a ton of fish for the whole trip.
Yeah.
But we caught that big one and it made the trip all worth it.
Yeah.
Even though we crashed the boat on day one and got smashed and wet and dirty and just it was crazy.
Right. But,
I mean, it was one of those trips where you'll never forget. One, because of the absolute almost tragedy.
Right, right.
And two, the absolute highs of catching that great big fish and just watching the look and of excitement on his face as he's reeling this fish in. And then we get it in and he gets to hold it and he's looking and he's going, what in the heck? You know, with that great big mouth. He can fit his whole arm in the mouth. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was just massive.
So that actually makes me want to ask you a question. You know, like as a dad, right? I'm new to this, and we'll probably have some dads or even some moms listening in. You know what? How was that moment for you to watch your son at the time, like 10 years old, right? Just reeling in this monster pike, and like you said, you got to see his reaction. But how was it to you, like just as like from a dad to son point of view? Yeah. How did that whole thing play out for you?
It was really cool. So I grew up differently, so my dad would have been the one who would have, like, this is a big fish, give me the rod.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, like...
Tip out there for any dads that's you, let your son reel it in.
Let him do it.
And then he'll explain why as well.
Yeah, so, you know how much it sucked as a kid? It's like, I got a great big fish on, and your dad's like, you know what, you just can't do it. Let me do it for you. Yeah. And you're like, that was stupid. But anyway, so... For me, I have made the commitment early, like, this is you, you're going to do it. Unless you can't hold on to the poles and rip it out of your hands, I'll help hold it, but this is yours.
Yeah. You're going to do the work.
You're doing the work. You fight this fish. You catch it. Your accomplishment.
Yeah, you earned it.
You know, I want my kids to succeed. I want them to know that they can do things.
Yeah, definitely.
I let him bring it in, and... He did it all. And, the whole time, he's like, Dad, I'm going to lose it. I'm like, just trust me. You're fine. Just keep reeling, keep tension, and just keep bringing it in nice and slow.
Yeah.
It'll be just fine.
Right.
And throughout the whole thing, you know, just seeing the fact of accomplishment. He got a letter in the mail. It was a master angler, I think it was, for Ontario.
That's so, awesome.
Master angler, Ontario. He got a certificate in the mail. So, you know, he got that huge accomplishment. He'll never... Yeah. 10 or 12 years old, whatever it was, I caught a master angler pike.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Right.
And yes, could have I reeled it in? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it would have been my accomplishment, not his.
Well, and the cool part is, like we said, you know, the main thing we went into this podcast, right? Like, stories are the things that really are what we pass on, what we give to the people around us. It's how we inspire people to join the outdoors. And right there by, like, again, you being the dad that allowed him to be the one that had to do the fight, that had to get in there and actually get his hands dirty with that fish, so to say, to fight him, you know, one-on-one, it allowed him to now produce a story that he'll always remember.
Yep. Now you he know, gets like, to share that with his kids.
Yeah, like we're looking back at our stories, and you know, it's the things like that, though, that one, as a dad, you'll always remember, but even more, it's one of those that he'll remember as a kid, and it will go past generations from even what we'll be on this earth with, right? And he'll be telling that story and he'll be getting passed down. And I'm sure he'll one day take his son, probably the same spot.
Maybe.
Be like, this is where my dad made my uncle, you know, crash, come on to me. And
crash the boat.
Crash the boat. And
smash me.
But I tell you what, son, this is where I also caught this massive fish.
Yep.
And it's like, and remember the tales, though, that do. That's what brings you, right? That brings you back to an area of your childhood. Like, I know we've talked. There's always those things that kind of, those trips you've been on or the places that you've always heard stories told of that you've longed to go and visit.
Yeah, and that's what I think is going to be sure is you can go experience these things, too. I mean, that whole trip didn't cost me, I mean, round trip was less than $1,000.
Yeah.
Less than $1,000. And that was with three people.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so doable. It's a doable trip. And I even rented a boat. Now I got my own boat I can bring up there with me.
Right.
Shh, you can do it for almost nothing.
Yeah.
Really, honestly.
It, yeah.
And just got to carve out the time and go make memories.
No, 100%. That's the hardest part, right? Is just making the commitment. Making the commitment. It's so easy to always be the one, be always be sitting there and saying, I want to go do this. I really wish I could. But a lot of times it is. It's just making the commitment to do it and putting life on hold for a moment to go and build those stories, those memories that honestly, you know, it's funny, right? I know we always look at what we can provide for our kids. We want to make sure we can give them the world. But honestly, the thing of giving them the world is you would be surprised how much more value those moments are. They won't remember the frigid cold when his teeth chattering. You know,
he'll remember, but it'd be a good memory.
Yeah, it won't be something that he'll sit there and be mad at you for. He'll remember the fishing. He'll remember the moments spent together. Like we said at the beginning, the camaraderie between two people out in the wilderness together and just kind of figuring it out, right? Like you said, there was moments in that story where you had to find ways to heat yourself that you never thought you'd have to do. Man. How to dry yourself. It is. It's the experiences. So I would say, like, again, we've said in the first episode, this is something that if you have kids, you know, listen to this with them. Get talking about some stories and things that you guys can go do. Because, honestly, that's one of the purposes of this, right, is to see more relationships get taken outdoors and to see the next generation really become a part of the outdoors.
Yeah, how you can get other people revved up about the outdoors.
Yeah, so honestly, we're probably going to have to do a part two on this. You know, it won't be, I don't know if we'll do it the next week or not, but within the next couple of weeks, we'll definitely have a part two on just, you know, pretty much story time of reliving things that honestly to us have been pivotal things in our outdoor journey and stories that honestly that we'll probably never forget.
Next time I'm going to share my first deer kill.
Yeah, and I actually have one that I wanted to share.
I tell you right now, if you've never, it'll be a surprise. You're going to want to listen to it. It's a rare occurrence, I think.
And I would say, too, just we'll leave two sweeteners there. Chris is going to share his first deer story. And I'm actually going to share a story that's the first time I ever was swarmed by monster bucks. It's only happened to me a handful of times in my life. And again, I'm 29 and it's only happened a handful of times, but I'm going to give you a little details on what that experience was like, how the heart pounded and all that. So again, if you're listening in, stay tuned for the next week. We're going to try to put these out every Wednesday. So again, stay tuned in, whether it's on, follow us on Facebook and again, Revved Up Outdoors. And also again, subscribe to the podcast. So you make sure you get the notifications weekly. And then we also have a YouTube channel that we're trying to build. Work with us. It's taking some time. But again, it's the same thing, Revved Up Outdoors as well. And I we're just excited for y'all to be a part of this journey. And we're going to share some stuff on there that is, again, details on some of these stories. We're working to get some pictures together from each of us so we can keep you guys updated on all this.
Yeah.
But
it's always fun to see the story and then see the outcome of the story.
Right. Hear it from us. And then you get to see some visuals. I'm like, oh crap. Like he said it was a big fish. And then you see it, you know, you're like, it really was. Or again, you think I'm talking about it. Well, it might have been drizzling in New Zealand. That guy's a sissy. I'll show you some pictures of, again, where my wife's sitting there with a headlamp eating rotisserie chicken while we're getting just drenched in rain. And you can see her hair is just boom, puffed out from the humidity. But again, that's what this is about. So one thing I want to leave this with you guys, if you have any things that you would like to just topics you want us to talk about, or honestly, if you're someone that's passionate about the outdoors and maybe you have a story that you think would be just, it's one of the ones that needs to be heard by some people, send us a message. I'd love to hear your details. And if we can, we'd love to get you, maybe even get you on the podcast in some form or way. That's what it's about, right? Building a community.
Building friends.
And enjoying the outdoors together.
Enjoying the outdoors together.
And as we said in the first podcast, again, this is for the average Joe. So don't feel like your stories don't matter just because they may not be this big, crazy story. But share them with us. We'd love to hear, because honestly, the more you guys can share with us, the more we can look to bring people on that may reach people that maybe aren't exactly like us. So again, Revved Up Outdoors podcast, episode 2.
Episode 2, in the books.
Officially in the books. So again, be blessed. We love you guys. See you next week.